controversial. It's less controversial than Hetta Mechira for Shviyat. So I think we spoke last week.
We're now beginning the recording.
Okay.
Today is April
5th. 6th.
April 6th. Rabbi Feldman is giving a shiur.
Okay. So last week we started talking about Mechiras Chametz, and I think we pointed out that there isn't a clear Talmudic source for what we do today. There are a couple of components that are mentioned in the Talmud. The Gemara does talk about selling a bechor, or selling the mother of a bechor, rather, a behemah of a keres, because if you have an animal that gives a bechor, that will put us in a intractable situation. So we have to kind of avoid that situation, so the Gemara recommends that. The Gemara does talk about selling chametz as a method of tashbisu, but in that context it means really selling it to be rid of it, not with any intent to get it back, but the idea that divesting yourself of the chametz could be a fulfillment of tashbisu. But that's again different from what we do, where we plan on ultimately taking it back. And there was a Tosafta that's closest to what we do, talking about somebody who seems to be stuck on a trip. It sounds like it was longer than he thought it would be, and now needs to preserve his chametz, so to speak. So he finds a non-Jewish passenger who he transfers it over to, and reacquires it after Pesach.
That's
the difference is there is that it seems much more aroi, much more individual needs circumstance,
ad hoc,
not something that is institutionalized and communalized as it is today. So the idea,
even people don't have any chametz today, you make a point of going and buying some chametz to sell, and someone else become farmer.
And there are poskim who advocate that. It's not even such a crazy thing. You know, there are poskim who feel that, whether or not I'm talking about buying chametz, it's a different thing. That's a separate question, by the way. You know, there's two components to that.
Rather than throw it out, save some and...
Well, there's two components to that statement, just parenthetically. The idea of should you go out and buy chametz in order to sell. So just two halves of that sentence separately. There are some poskim who did say that maybe everyone should sell, even if you don't think you have what to sell, because maybe it is an effective method of guaranteeing perfect tashbisu, and maybe we do advocate it for everyone. In terms of acquiring chametz where you don't have it, so we'll just talk about that for a second. The topic of tashbisu, which we're not up to right now, we'll see if we get to it before Pesach. I guess we have one more shiur before Pesach. We may or may not get up to it, but in terms of what the mitzvah of tashbisu is, so there is a lengthy discussion about whether tashbisu requires us to specifically destroy chametz or simply not have chametz. So if you don't have chametz, are you automatically in fulfillment of tashbisu? Sort of. Or if it was the idea basically that you're supposed to be chametzless, so if you happen to be chametzless, terrific. Or is it that you specifically have to destroy chametz, in which case, if you don't have any chametz to destroy, maybe there's no space for this mitzvah specifically. So there's a whole discussion, what that mean? There's a discussion about this in the Chas Chinuch, and the Avnei Nezer has a tshuva about this, where it's suggested that it wouldn't really mean what it sounds like, that, oh, because you have tashbisu, you have to go out and have some chametz in order to destroy it. It might just mean that the mitzvah of tashbisu is only relevant to people who have chametz. And if you don't, then fine. Similar to tzitzis on a four-cornered garment, which I believe the Athanaser brings up also, that if you don't have a four-cornered garment, you're not chayiv in tzitzis. And if you don't have chametz, you're not chayiv in tashbisu.
That's a very simple, now we go out and buy four-cornered garments.
The example would break down at that point in terms of it, but that's got other reasons to it. But it's true that it's not a perfect example, if that's the conclusion that we want to draw. But it would seem that we're not really advocating that anyone go out and buy chametz, but that if there is chametz, you have a mitzvah tashbisu, and according to some, if you don't have chametz, maybe you don't have a mitzvah tashbisu. Well, others will say, no, if you don't have chametz, then lecha tashbisu galal mizah. If you enter Pesach without any chametz in your possession, so great. Some point out that it's the same word. The Avnei Nezer has a truth about this also. There's a discussion about this in the Sefer Koch V'Yitzchak, if I remember correctly, that if somebody has, the word tashbisu is the same word as Shabbos. And Binyantif also, we talk about Shvisas Yantif and Shvisas Asur. So that word doesn't presume that in order to be Shomer Shabbos, you have to be doing Malach up until the last second of Shabbos, and then Davka be Shoyves from it. That if a person's not doing Malach on Shabbos, so then he's keeping Shabbos. Even though the Pasuk does seem to contrast Shishisim and Tavlo, but that's got different implications. But we wouldn't assume that one's only Shomer Shabbos if he is doing Malacha right until then. So if the word really does indicate some type of relationship, one could say Tashbisu has the same type of definition. So that's a lengthy discussion. Maybe we'll fill in a little bit more next week, possibly not. We'll see what time allows. But
isn't there, for example, some people say that for mentioning if you do an electric light, you should purposely turn them off, then turn them on?
Yeah, that's because of light, Neros. So we want the mitzvah to turn on candles. But that's not about Malacha. That's about the mitzvah of Neros. So in any case, so just that statement that you just said, that maybe we should buy chametz in order to sell it, so each half of that equation has what to talk about, but that's it's a whole separate point. So in any event, it does seem that many poskim have accepted, at least in theory, the concept of mechiras chametz, which is once upon a time much more controversial than it is. And we spoke about some of the reasons why hetem mechira of shviyas is even more controversial. That as controversial as chametz is, shviyas even more controversial. We talked about the fact that the sale may not be so seriously acceptable, seen as serious, if first of all we continue to be involved with the field during the Shemitah year, if we would not be ready for the purchaser to come right out of check and say, I want to keep it. When it comes to chametz, we probably would be okay with that. If the person wants to say, I'll pay for the whole chametz, terrific. You're mostly concerned about financial loss anyway. So if the guy says, listen, I'll pay for it all, there's a check, so then we'd probably take it. When it comes to the land of Israel, presumably if the Arab purchaser says, I'll give you a check for $10 billion and I want to keep the country, besides the fact that it's not even a proper valuation, but that's presumably not what we're going to agree to. And the fact that the fields continue to be worked during that time as opposed to the chametz, where we're not involved at all with the chametz during that time, is another significant difference. And there's a philosophical difference in terms of the harama issue. The question of that word, harama, which literally could translate as an evasion, but has different connotations and different usages. So sometimes it sounds bad, you're evading, and sometimes it's considered a legitimate evasion, that sometimes the Talmud seems to recommend it, that you can avoid being obligated in something, and sometimes that's okay or appropriate. So what's the usage here?
But I would assume the following. I would assume that because for chametz there's an isur of hana, of getting any benefit whatsoever, right? Mm-hmm. So you got to do whatever you can just to get rid of it or whatever. I mean, it's clear because the head to mechira works that it's not also to get hana from your field. It's not also to get hana from the field. You can't get hana from your field or whatever, right?
Well, it's actually a very difficult point to interpret that way, to say that it's clear because it works. It's a huge debate if it works. And many poskim will say vehemently that it doesn't work, or either that it doesn't work or that it's usher to do, which is a whole other element.
But for example, you could build on that field if you weren't growing anything on it, right? So selling it, you know, I mean, it's not that you have to get rid of the land. You have to put yourself in a position where you can get, where you won't starve to death, I think is a justification, where if you try, you know, if you don't grow things on the land. Whereas chametz, it doesn't make a difference. If I like chametz, I don't like chametz, it doesn't make any difference to me. You can't get any hana whatsoever from it.
Right, so
you can't offer it to a guy. You can't offer it to a dog.
In what direction does that point
so
to?
So I'm saying in that case, you would say that I can understand that for mechiras chametz, that we are stricter, right?
Also, well, we're stricter in terms of they saying mechira shouldn't.
I know, now I could box myself.
Right,
in.
Which direction are we going?
I've argued the wrong point.
Right, the question which direction are we going?
It's part of it.
We'll have to see about that. But some of the points is in terms of the philosophical issue, the harama issue, that the question, are we evading the will of the Torah, so to speak? So when it comes to hetem mechira, it seems more likely that there is a evasion. That's what the detractors will suggest, because the Torah says not to work the field, and you're doing this to work the field. You're doing this to kind of get around, essentially. Now, I'm not saying that judgmentally, there are good reasons to do it, but that's the end result, is that it's coming out to the opposite of what the Torah is commanding in terms of this. And in terms of chametz, it's not the opposite, it's an alternative route. The Torah says get rid of the chametz, and you're saying, okay, I'll sell it so I don't own it. Now, is that an adequate satisfaction of what the Torah is asking? That's what's up for debate, but it's not the opposite of what the Torah is asking. It's just a possibly acceptable or not acceptable alternate route.
Should poskim say mechiras chametz is not acceptable
Are there any that say that it's...
So there are different levels of objection. It's hard to say it's not acceptable at all, because, again, we have these sources in the Tosefta and elsewhere. But to say that it's reliable enough to deal with, let's say, the Yisra Darais that's involved, and we'll talk about that in a second, or to say that it's a good idea, or it's l'chachil, or should be done on a mass communal level, there are all types of different levels of objection. And then there were specific objections that were raised to different ways of doing it. So there are many poskim who will say it's b'dieved, or it shouldn't be used for real chametz, or it's too complicated to rely on. That's a big issue also. We'll talk about that in a second, about the complications that are involved.
So, I mean, if we're worried about, so for example, I have at home this canister of biking or exercise electrolyte, you know, solution powder I have, right? It's called...
For drinking.
It's called Heed, right? It's in a powder, right? Mm-hmm. It has CRC, mm-hmm. Chicago, right? If you look at the ingredients, there isn't one thing on there that's less than 10 syllables and doesn't have X's or Y's in it, right?
Uh-huh.
So I know it's not something... So I tried to call him. I said, well, should I be selling this for chametz? Forget it. I'll give him the benefit of the doubt and say, okay, I'm not going to use it for chametz, so I own this there, right? Maybe it's production. So I said, well, yes, you do. Is that something that, for example, that they should not include in the sale of chametz because it's a suffix on whether that's chametz? It's probably definitely not chametz. Maybe, you know, produces... Or is that something that, no, we just lump everything together and it's up to the guy to figure
right,
out?
So technically...
Is that a stupid question?
Not a stupid question at all. Technically, it doesn't end up making that much of a difference, because the way we do things are... So once you've already decided that you're not going to be consuming...
I mean, I know the guy wouldn't want this stuff. I mean, I barely choke it down when I'm riding.
Well, somebody wants it. That's why they make it. Somebody wants it. It has some usage. The company wouldn't be in business if nobody wanted it. So there are... although, you're raising another issue, you know, which apparently we'll come back to not wanting issues in a second.
Right.
But... the question of something like that, where you're not sure what its status is, so it doesn't end up making that much of a difference, since you're saying you're willing to give up consuming it over the course of Pesach, so you're not going to be involved with it. So if you put it away with the stuff that's away, then it doesn't end up mattering so much, because what you end up doing in the shtar, so the shtar says that you're selling all the chametz.
That's in this area.
If it turns out, you say klap ishmaya galia, that if God knows that it's chametz, then it's sold, and if not, then it's not. It doesn't make a difference, because the end result will be that after Pesach, it's going to be returned to your property, and you'll be able to use all of it one way or another, either because it was chametz that was sold, or it was not chametz that was not sold. So there's very little practical difference. It's hard to find so much of an issue that's going to present itself. In any event, so among the objections were, how serious are we about the sale, and does it really work on the broad communal level, or is it advisable on the broad communal level that we're talking about? And is it a harama? Is it an evasion? So the Beis Yosef quotes from the Rebbeinu Yerucham, that Rebbeinu Yerucham quotes the Tosefta that we mentioned before about the guy in the boat. And so he says, so therefore this is something you can do. Ubilvad shelo yarim, as long as you don't do an evasion. And the Beis Yosef says, what's he talking about? The whole thing's an evasion. And how could you phrase this not as an evasion? And as he mentions, to bolster his point, says you can even give it as a matana al manas lahachzir, meaning that you're giving it to him as a gift, on the condition that he will return it to you afterwards. So isn't that an overt ploy? It seems to be very hard to see that as anything normal, as anything that you would normally be doing in the context of any other setting. So how could you not call that a harama? So there was much debate about this, just on the one hand in the functionality, on the other hand, on the appropriateness. Is this something that we want to do when we're dealing with a mitzvah? If you have a mitzvah, do we want to address it in a way that is essentially a harama, essentially evasive? So this is a question that comes up in the Het Mechira also. When you deal with the Het Mechira, again, it's even more controversial for so many reasons. It's a much bigger fight than Mechira Samitz is. But it's both practical and philosophical. There's essentially, let's say, three levels of question to ask. One is, does this work? Two, if it works, is it permitted to do? Specifically in the Het Mechira case, where selling land in Eretz Yisrael out of Jewish hands is itself possibly a Torah violation. So, A, does it work? B, is it mutter to do? And three, C, even if it both works and is technically legal, is it appropriate? Is it right? Is it the right attitude that we want to encourage, we want to institutionalize, we want to endorse? So certainly when it comes to the Hatzim Mechir, you have all three of those questions being asked constantly, and it's constantly reevaluated also, because so much of it is dependent on the external circumstances. And they've radically changed from, you know, the 1880s until today in so many different ways. So does the existence of a state make it better, make it worse, make it more necessary, make it less necessary? Every point, every 7 years, you have the same fights.
Right,
all of this, but that's from a different angle. But every 7 years, you have the same fight starting all over again, because now we have to reevaluate. So what is this decade like? What is the previous decade like? Well, before the state, it was less necessary because we didn't have a whole country who's dependent on what's happening. Now we need it more. And others will say, no, but now we're after the states, and now you have an institutionalized nation. How can you be selling? It's the worst. Every direction point, every factor that changes points in both directions, and it continues to be incredibly controversial. When it comes to Mechiras Chametz, so everything is on a lower flame, so to speak. I guess no pun intended in terms of that. But the same types of examples, same types of issues present themselves. So does this work? That becomes a major question. And is it proper? If the Torah says get rid of your chametz, are you doing that? So there was the opinion of the Bechor Shor. I don't think we got up to this last week. This is an important point. The Bechor Shor was a commentary on Tzachim and other things. So he suggests, he says, you know what, really this does not work for an Isser Daraisa. This is a harama. So when we talk about a harama, we talk about something that's evasive. So sometimes you'll find that, okay, a harama is acceptable if we're dealing with a rabbinical prohibition. If we're dealing with a biblical prohibition, we're not comfortable with it. That's too much. So says the Bechor Shor, we can only allow this harama of Mechiras Chametz because we're dealing with the rabbinical prohibition. So you'll say, what are you talking about? Torah prohibition, right? The Torah says, don't own chametz. Bayra bay matzah is an issur d'oraisa. So he says, why is it that it's a rabbinical prohibition? He borrows an expression from the Gemara in the beginning of Pesachim. The Gemara there says that bedikas chametz, the obligation to search the house for chametz before Pesach, so we treat that, in all of its details, we treat that like a din d'rabbanan. So why should we treat it like a d'rabbanan? If we're worried that we may have chametz in the house, we may be in violation of Bali Rabbi Matzeh, for example, so that's an Issur D'oraisa. Why should we treat it like a Drabbanan? So the Gemara has an expression there that Bebitl Ba'alma Sagi. That since we do Bitl chametz, we divorce our chametz, we declare ourselves disconnected, that is effective on a level Min HaTorah. So Min HaTorah, we're not worried about Bali Rabbi anymore. So midrabanan, they made a din that you have to look for the chametz. And the Gemara says, habodek tzarech shivata, which is how I explain nowadays why I don't check my luggage if I can avoid it when I'm taking a plane trip. Because habodek tzarech shivata, if you check your luggage, you waste a lot of time coming back trying to get it back. So better to avoid that. But the Gemara means it in a different context, habodek tzarech shivata, that even though we have bedika, we still have bitul chametz also, we have both, because they have to, on a rabbinical level, they're combined. But strictly speaking, says the Gemara, that bitul ba'al masag. So says the Bechor Shor, so we're only dealing with the Drabbanan, because we all do bitul chametz, and the bitul chametz negates our relationship to the chametz, so what's left is the Drabbanan. So yeah, so for the Drabbanan, the Mechiras chametz works. So there were some who supported this view, including Niktil Sachoshan and others, but there were many who had a very big problem with this. Said that, wait a minute, there's a big issue that doesn't seem to work. What's the issue? I think we alluded to it last week, and we forgot up to it.
Yes,
we did discuss last week, I remember, that it's not the same chametz. The chametz are mevatel, and the chametz that you are selling is not the same chametz. You can't do business with chametz that you are disconnecting yourself with. So you are selling the chametz that is identifiable, and the bitl is for the chametz that's not identifiable, separate from the fact that there were some Rishonim who held that bitl only works on non-identifiable chametz. That if you know the chametz is there, bitl isn't even an option, according to some Rishonim. But in any event, it certainly seems to be the case that the chametz that you are doing business transactions with is not subject to bitl. So this seems to be a major problem. There are suggestions how to deal with it.
aren't we so machmer, so afraid that we're using multiple levels to disown the chametz?
So that's true also,
so
but that's
using vitol, we're doing vior, right? We're also doing mechira. So the point, I thought the point was that if we're mavatelik, but if we have $2,000 worth of liquor, the bitol might not be chal.
So right. So
therefore, we want to sell it because maybe in our mind the bitol is not fully chal or not chal. So because you don't know, because bitol is something that's psychological, right? Mental.
But Bechira is not associated with us trying to do a better job.
It's an add-on.
It keeps us from financial loss.
No, you're both right.
To go beyond, because maybe our beetle, the Chachila beetle is enough.
You would not sell it.
The Chachila beetle is enough. The problem is, what happens if you
don't? You would not sell a cracker. You might sell a bottle of Johnny Walker or whatever it is.
So let me address that. You're both right on some level, and on some level that's a little bit part of the answer, but it's not enough of the answer, because there's truth in all three of these positions. There's truth in both of what you're saying, and there's truth that it does help to explain the Bechor Shor, but not totally. That yes, you're right, that there are those who would advocate doing Mechira and everything else as part of a group effort to push every button that we can. And you're also right that that's not the only reason why people are doing Mechiras Chametz. Doing Mechiras Chametz specifically to maintain a connection to the Chametz or to maintain a right to get back the Chametz later. So that's also true. But the reason it's not a full explanation of the Bechor Shor's issue, even though it seems to be a little bit what he's getting at, but the problem is at the end of the day, what you're saying is to be machmir, we'll do every method. That's fine, but he's not saying that, really. He's saying that because we're doing this other method, that's why we could be mekel. That really, mechira shouldn't work for the Isser d'Oraisa of owning chametz, but because we do the bittel, so therefore it works. And really, it's hard to say that that's what's happening. It's hard to say that we're assuming that there's bittel and mechira on the same chametz for reasons in both directions. That it's hard to say you can really sell something if you're mevatel it, and it's hard to say you can mevatel something if you're selling
property.
It right, or before it's on somebody else's property, or before you transfer it, or especially according to Rishon, we say you can't even mevatel chametz that you know about. So it's hard to say that they're really actually working together. You could say that we throw them all in to be machmir for everything, but to say that one makes the other work better is difficult to say. Although maybe that is what the Bechor Shor is getting at, but that's why there were many who did not accept the Bechor Shor. And many felt that you have to kind of man up here, that essentially if you're going to rely on this, you better be ready to rely on it for Daraisa as well, because you can't say that it's only an issue Drabanan that you are addressing, which is why there are many who do have a practice only to sell non-absolute chametz. They don't sell bread, they don't sell the hard chametz types of products. They sell taruvis, they sell things that are chametz related that they would need on Pesach, maybe specifically like the products you mentioned before. Well, not assuming who knows what's actually in it, but whatever it is. But that actual chametz they don't want to sell because of this concern that they don't feel that it really works on a level min ha-toru.
So I once heard Rav Schechter talk about the Shabbos clock. Mm-hmm. Said he used to be in his grandparents' home or whatever. It says, because at the time they had a light that people thought electricity was expensive. It wasn't even that they thought it wasn't there for, you know, that they monitored the Shabbos clock, you know, because it saved money or whatever else maybe, and not realizing the Shabbos clock itself cost money to run or whatever else the economy. But, you know, he was raising the possibility that nowadays, since we know the electricity really isn't that expensive or whatever, and, you know, that certainly the net isn't that expensive, whether or not it's really proper to use a Shabbos clock, you know, for that purpose. So are we saying the same thing, that now we know that the slight, you know, a loaf of bread, a box of crackers or whatever is really, you know, minuscule compared to what we're spending for Pesach, for the food or whatever, that you really wouldn't do that because there's no reason to get, you know, you're not saving that much money or whatever?
I haven't said that. I mean, there are those who feel that way. Ultimately, when we finish this topic either today or next week, we'll discuss why I think there is some major reasons to endorse Mechiras Chametz.
Okay.
But, certainly there are those who would say, yeah, if you're not dealing with a major loss, why get involved in something which, especially if you're dealing with actual Chametz, which could, the Isser D'Oraisa is not mitigated by how much it costs, so you're violating Isser D'Oraisa if you have one slice of bread or if you have a bread factory. So why get involved in the Isser D'Oraisa if
you're not pushed to by major financial loss. So there are those who would certainly take that approach. At the moment, they're not lending on one side or the other, but there are certainly those who would say that. So when it comes to this question of relying on it for a deraisa, so that is an open question. Just to mention two points off of that. So first of all, it may at least help for after the fact, that even if you don't rely on it for during Pesach, so what about after Pesach? So chametz that was owned by a Jew on Pesach, it's called chametz she'avor lo b'Pesach, so that's prohibited to eat. We assume it's probably a debate between the Talmud Bavli and the Talmud Yerushalmi. We assume that, that's an issur d'rabbanan, that that's not a total problem. So if that's the case, someone could say that even if they themselves wouldn't have wanted to sell the chametz at Pesach, this is big nafkaminas, for example, let's say somebody else's chametz that was sold, that let's say you yourself would not have sold the chametz because you think that it's not appropriate for an issur d'oraisa, but somebody else did and you want to eat it now after Pesach, so then presumably the issur d'rabbanan that's involved is a different standard. So you could, even if you're not willing to rely on it for the issur d'oraisa, probably would be willing to rely on it for the issur d'rabbanan. It's two different halves, which has major ramifications, by the way, just without getting into all the details of this now, but the stores that continue to do business on Pesach and sell it, so there are poskim who work that out, but there are many others who feel very uncomfortable about that. It's very tricky, as you can imagine. So then the question is, what happens after Pesach? So there are many who are machmer on that also, to Davka look for stores that don't do this on Pesach, which is understandable. But it's also reasonable to say that...
Privately held stores as opposed to corporations, or both?
Either way, it depends on who is this. There's a lot of complexity involved, and the question is, who is the store owner, and who is the distributor, where are they buying their chametz from? It's very complicated. But there is room, in theory, to have two tiers of attitudes towards this. That one could say, listen, if I was a store owner, so I'm in violation of Bayi Rabbi Yimatzeh over Pesach, potentially Nisr Daraisa, so I would not want to get involved. I'd want to close my store over Pesach rather than do this. But to purchase from such a store afterwards, so then that's Nisr Darabanan of Chamech over Pesach, is what we're talking about. So there is room to say that I'm more willing to rely on it for the purposes of the Darabanan than for the purposes of the Daraisa. It's interesting. I don't hear that suggested so much in terms of... that question in terms of how you relate to these stores, you either approve or you don't approve. I don't see so much of that distinction. But there does seem to be the grounds to make such a distinction that in terms of you are violating Bayi Rabbi Yimatzeh, so you might not want to do this yourself. In terms of the knas of Chametz Shavuot of Pesach, is it the Rabbanan, so then there might be more room to rely on it. I saw a discussion about this in a case where you also would have to address the two halves separately. But there was a situation, Rahman al-Islam, let's say somebody's in a coma, right? And you hope he'll get better, and let's say you're hoping that in the middle of Pesach he'll wake up. So right now he owns a lot of chametz. So what's going to happen? So he is not in a position to sell his chametz. He's in a coma. Now, can others sell it on his behalf? So that's tricky, because we have a principle of Zachin lo li'adam shelo b'fanav, that you can acquire something on behalf of somebody else. But the basic rule is, it has to be an absolute schus. It has to be something which is clearly beneficial. So nobody would ever say, well, if it was up to me, I wouldn't have bought it. It has to be clear that you can act on somebody else's behalf. You're only benefiting them, you're not hurting them. So generally, you can't sell something on somebody else's behalf, because the person might say, I don't want to sell it. You know, you want to give me a gift, fine. But I don't want to sell my property. You can't sell it without their consent. So
no,
that's
no one wants to have an
avera. So that's in the abstract, that's an issue. Here, there is a lot of basis to say that nobody would want an avera, that a religious person wouldn't want the avera of owning the chametz, although it may require you to either assume that he is that religious, or can you abstract it to a general principle that people in general don't want averas. Or you could also, it would make a real difference. Let's say the person's not so religious and you're not so sure. So then it's tricky whether you could say that that's a valid sale, you know, just because you wouldn't want it, but maybe if he doesn't have your same value system, how do you know you can sell his property based on that? Maybe, but it's tricky.
Is this not the same thing as a boy who comes bar mitzvah over Pesach? I mean, the level of sale that he can
Before he's a gadol,
yeah, this is the level after.
That's similar. If he owns chametz of a Pesach, it's interesting. That would be, it doesn't come up so often because children tend not to own their own food storages.
They have pockets full of candy.
Right, but usually get rid of them. Usually not selling. They don't have.
That's right. But it would be the same thing in the sense, right?
this issue, the question will come up, it's an interesting question, you know, what level can you transfer property?
Right, right.
Which, because in general, the Gemara talks about that in other contexts, that it's a problem to give him your... The Gemara says a problem to give your esrog to a katan if you want to get it back. Because the katan can acquire, but he can't transfer back. So that is it's interesting to bring up that question. So if a katan owned chametz and tried to sell it, and then one then became an adult, which matter he already sold it. The question is, not so much becomes an adult, the question becomes is what is his power to transfer property?
What happens is if a parent sells it, the cotton has it, it's not his.
So it becomes a deal.
But then if the cotton takes it on Holomaid, and he becomes a gadol, then it's his.
Then the difference
it's his because he can't acquire it, because his father got rid of it. But if he's a gadol...
I mean, if he was mafkir in his house. I mean, if,
right. But if he, yeah, that, he goes and says, this is mine, then it's his. He's a gadol.
But therefore,
it's his.
So it's
a diaraisa for him as a gadol, right?
Right?
It's not a diaraisa for him as a cotton.
Right.
So you're saying that we should be willing to rely on the sale. But either way, whether or not the sale is valid, it doesn't matter. The fact that he becomes bar mitzvah in the middle of Pesach, it's still after whatever happened.
Right.
So it wouldn't make a difference whether he's 8 years old or 12 and a half. It's still going to boil down to the same thing. The fact is, he transferred it out of his property as a cut.
Well, you could have also said it.
Yeah, but the point would have been earlier, what I'm saying was, when the sale was made, it was not his. It was his. The father said, I'm selling it. It's not yours anymore.
Right, if the father...
The father sold it. But then during Chalamayit, he says, no, I want that bubble gum, it's mine. And then he reacquired it.
But he can only reacquire it if it's Hefker. If he sold it to somebody else, he can't reacquire it.
No, because it's no longer...
Right, but if he was mafkir, that could happen. You know, if the father's a mevatel l'chametz, so to speak. So then, in theory, there are scenarios where that could happen. But
so back in the other case, even if someone is not religious, we assume that... he doesn't really want to do.
Yeah, no. In a lot of contexts, right? That comes up. The
right?
Question is,
so therefore, we have that someone is especially sick. But we assume that although he's not making the right decisions, he really wants.
Yeah, there is such
the
a.
Shama wants to make the right.
There
decisions.
Is such approach we
so
find
therefore
in many contexts.
We want to help him.
Right. No, I understand
if
a lot.
He can't make the right decisions for.
Right.
Him.
So there is such an approach often. Yes, you have to figure out whether it's a totally effective on a level in our Torah, or is that somewhat of a little bit of a more iffy approach. So there is what to base it on to say that we can sell his chametz on his behalf, not just for the religious reasons, but also because of the monetary reasons, that if it's going to turn out, he's going to find that his chametz is actually valueless once he owns it on Pesach. But say he lives in a community with only religious people and no one's going to buy it from him then. So then that's another just straight monetary reason why he would presumably want to get rid of something that would be valueless. And if by getting rid of it, he'll ultimately be able to get it back, so then mathematically you can make a stronger case. But in any event, so the Tshuva Shevei Akahasi talks about this, and his point is that even though this is a little bit of an iffy way of doing things, but for the Yisod Rabbanan, it should for sure work. So presumably what he means is that there's two halves of what we're concerned about. There's the ownership of chametz on Pesach, which is Nesu Deraisa Bayirah Bayimatzei, and then being able to use the chametz after Pesach is a question of chametz Shavuot Pesach Adin Rabbanim. So in terms of the Yisod Deraisa, in this case, we can't hold him responsible. He's an honest. I mean, he doesn't have any consciousness right now. So you can't say he's in violation of anything. But maybe we should still worry that after Pesach, he'd be if God willing, he wakes up, he'll have an issue of chametz Shavuot Pesach. So in that case, that's Mrs. Rabbanus, he says, so that we can rely on whatever we did in order to sell the chametz on his behalf. We'll just mention, we'll talk about next week a little bit some of the complexities. It's a tremendously complicated, and that's why we have certain ways to address that. It's a fascinating topic in itself. But it's very possible to do it wrong, which is one thing we'll discuss. And there is a view in Achronim, it's a question how much to rely on this, but it's discussed in the Masas Binyamin and the Chasam Sofer, that if you did it wrong, there are those who will argue still that the chametz is mutter after Pesach, which would be a big relief if you're talking about a lot of chametz. Not just because of what we're just saying now, because chametz over the Pesach is an issa d'rabbanan and we have a lower standard, but there are those who suggest that this could be seen as a type of bittul, that
if you tried to sell your chametz, and then you find out later that, you know, like you tried to throw it in the ocean, and you find that afterwards it bounced back into your backyard, but you thought you threw it away. So then that itself is a statement of bittul. That's a way of saying I divest from it. And the fact that you weren't successful, okay, you thought you were successful, so there were those who were ready to say, based on a comment of the Ran, that that is a type of bittul. The Ran's comment, just to quickly see how it fits in here, is because the whole discussion why bittul chametz is effective. If bittul is a type of hefker, like some of the Rishonim understand, it should be much more formal. It should be out loud in front of people, and it may require other things. So the Ran says that really, bittul wouldn't make the cut in any other area of life. The reason bittul works when it comes to chametz is because really we don't own chametz to begin with. Chametz, asur bahana, has no value. We don't really own it. So strictly speaking, were it not for the prohibition of chametz, we wouldn't own the chametz. It wouldn't be technically ours.
Why?
But the Gemara says, sorry?
Why?
Because it's valueless. You can't own something that's valueless.
Why is chametz valueless?
Because asur bahana. Which is a whole other discussion, by the way, so you could spend many hours analyzing that. But if one assumes that chametz is valueless because asur bahana, so it doesn't have any ability to be...
There are other things that are asur bahana that we could own.
It's not clear at all.
It's
not clear you can own a bodhisattva. It's a big discussion. It's an hour discussion, but just for now, to take it as a given that there's a whole debate about this. You can read a long essay about this. The Sefer Marchesha is the first thing when he talks about this.
Easter of having
that might mean, right, that might mean that you can't own it. It's a whole discussion. Take my word for it. It's a whole discussion. If you want, we can revisit it at a greater length. But there's a whole discussion. But specifically, the Gemara says in Psachim that Shnei Dvarim Eino B'Rishusso Shal Adam V'Asana Kasuf Kiluhim B'Rishusso, that there are two things.
So that Basa B'Chalov.
Basa B'Chalov might be impossible to own also.
But you don't own it.
Maybe. So there is such a view. There is such a view. That to say Shnei Dvarim Eino B'Rishusso Shal Adam V'Asana Kasuf Kiluhim B'Rishusso. The Gemara says there are two things which technically you don't own, but the Torah made it as if you own them to kind of get you in trouble. So one is a bor b'rishus haravim. If I were to make a pit in the middle of Amsterdam Avenue, so somebody falls in the pit, why should I be chayav? It's not, I don't own Amsterdam Avenue. It's not my house. Why should I be liable? So I made it. So the Gemara says, "Asan kilu heim b'rishus." So it's as if it was on my property. It's as if somebody tripped in my backyard.
Right.
And the other is chametz on Pesach. The chametz on Pesach technically, really, we don't really own, but the iser means that we make it as if you own, which you could make a quick comparison. Let's say to intermarriage, right? Intermarriage is a prohibition, but it's really impossible, right? The kedushin isn't tofes. You know, if you marry a non-Jew, the marriage isn't really valid anyway. So how could it be a prohibition of intermarriage? It's impossible to do.
It's a pilenius.
Well, that's one way of looking at it. But really, we understand, right? We understand that the iser is not to actually do it, but to act in the manner in which it's done, even though we don't recognize the status at the same time. So it could be that owning chametz is the same thing, that you can't actually own chametz. There's an iser to act with ownership of chametz, even though it's not really recognized as ownership. So the Ran says, because that's in effect, so really we have a much lower standard for what you have to do to free yourself of it. That since, really, essentially, the chametz, gave the example before of throwing out and bounce back, that's what happens anyway. The Torah basically pulled the chametz out of your house and then tossed it back in. So if you just swat it back, so to speak, it's as if you stop it from flying back into your house. So that's what the Ran says, that just this bittul is effective to do that.
I thought we said that in Erev Pesach, that although we don't, there's no Easter of chametz, but Hashem ushered us to have chametz Erev Pesach. That's where the quote comes in, that he extended the time that you can't have chametz, that there's an Easter of Hanah, Easter of chametz before Pesach start, Erev Pesach.
There is an
Easter. He also said that he extended it to the Easter to start earlier. It starts 10:30, 11 o'clock, etc. So that was where that quote was. And even though we don't have it, then it was...
From that point on,
the Easter was extended.
Well, no, the quote refers to the whole time as minus the chametz, including Pesach.
Right.
That all that time, the chametz is not in our possession, and he puts it back in. So the Ran says that's why bittul works, because we're just swatting it back from bouncing back into our possession, so to speak. So that's what some say when it comes to mechira also, that even if the mechira turns out not to be valid, so then it could be you're still accomplishing something, because that desire to sell it, that good faith belief that you had sold it, would be equated to what the Ran's talking about in terms of bittul. A lot more to say about this guy. Well, next week we'll finish up this topic and we'll get that all done before Pesach in time to sell our chametz. Okay, should have a wonderful day. Should be only good things. And,